everybody. This is Dr. Narimoto Harford and my co-host, Dr. Susan Kolb. You are listening to Temple of Health radio show. And today we have the pleasure of talking to Stephanie Marone, the author of Natural Medicine Guide to Autism. Good morning, Ms. Marone. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Very good. Are we pronouncing your name correctly?
You are. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, it is a pleasure to talk to you. I was reading your book, and it's actually a very wonderful book. And I was wondering, before we start, if you wouldn't mind giving us some background as far as you are concerned.
Yes, thank you for your kind words on my book, and thanks for having me on the show, too. I've been on the show before. I always enjoy a Temple of Health. It's wonderful. So my background, I'm a writer first, which means I'm quite the researcher, but I got my undergraduate degree in dance therapy, and that was the first time I encountered autism, because that used to be one of the treatments that was considered positive for autism because of the movement component. That was one way to get through to autistic children. So that was my first encounter when I was in college at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. I did a practicum, an internship, where I was witnessing what an autistic child who is institutionalized is like. And it was quite shocking. It was the classic picture of the checked out child that you see in the old movies about it. And that was one of my early experiences with autism. And I was interested in mental disorders in general. I did a practicum on a lockdown ward at the Mendota Mental Health Hospital in Madison. That was a county hospital. And they let the dance therapists on that ward to work with the patients because they figured we couldn't hurt them. It was not because they were so behind dance therapy. That was also a very enlightening experience. And then going back before that to when I was 16 years old, I applied for a job at a county mental hospital in Pennsylvania. And when I went in for the interview, I walked down the halls through where the various patients were just sitting out in the halls. And it was a shocking experience. And for me at 16, I think for anybody at any age, the way that mental illness used to be dealt with and still is in some places, it's so primitive, and it was very shocking to see the way the people there were treated and how they existed every day. So that was I had an early interest in mental illness, so-called mental illness, because I see it as a body-mind-spirit. These are body-mind-spirit conditions. You can't separate the mind from the other two. And then I would say it was my introduction to natural medicine. I got very involved in natural medicine, and so it was an easy segue to start writing about mental disorders from the natural medicine perspective.
Yeah, you do have a few books about actually different mental health issues and how to take care of them naturally.
Yes, it's a series called The Healthy Mind Guides, and there's 6 books in the series. It's depression and anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, addiction, autism, and I'm forgetting one, I think. Anxiety, depression. These are not really self-help books, because it's not about, well, just take an herb, for example, St. John's Wort for depression, instead of taking an antidepressant pharmaceutical. That is, I'm looking at the natural medicine approach from a much deeper place, which is it looks at the underlying causes of each of these disorders or contributing factors. And the wonderful thing about it is you don't have to prove causality in order to start treatment. So because the natural medicine treatments are aimed at improving health in general, and if the condition that the person has improves while their overall health is being improved, while underlying conditions such as gastrointestinal disturbance are being dealt with, then that's wonderful. But that's the beauty of natural medicine, is we don't have to have the answers to start, because it's looking at
what are the underlying conditions in this person, and they can be something like allergies. They can be, in case of autism, many children with autism have allergies, or they have digestive conditions of one kind or another, so that they're not absorbing nutrients that they may be eating a good diet even, but they can't absorb the nutrients, so that, of course, affects the brain.
Exactly. Now, one of the things that I really like about the book is it's actually is very, even for people who are, it can be very mind-boggling, you know, because autism, nobody really knows what it is.
Yeah.
And but one of the good things about the book is that it cross-references to different chapters. So, for example, you are reading and, you know, has different parts and tells you different things, and then on the side note, it says, well, if you want to know about genetic approach of, you know, autism, go to chapter 6 or chapter 7. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is so wonderful.
Oh, I'm so glad you found that helpful. Yeah, we were really trying to organize it to have it not be overwhelming, because many of the people that read this book are parents who have received the diagnosis for their child, that the child has autism. And it's overwhelming, the amount of information that, as a parent, you have to plow through to try to figure out what to do for your child. So we were really trying to make this very reader-friendly and organized in such a way that it wouldn't be overwhelming.
You guys have done a wonderful job,
Thank you.
Now, if you don't mind, if you can tell our audience about what you consider autism and what in your book, what you are, how the approaches of the autism and everything. And maybe we can go with the definition first before we go with the treatment.
Okay. Well, the definition of autism, it's based on the Bible of the American Psychiatric Association. This is it's called the DSM-4. It's diagnosis and, well, I'm get the exact title, but anyway, it's what they use for, it's called a Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. This is what they use as a guideline for diagnosing any so-called mental disorders. Autism is included in that, but as I said, increasingly, people are recognizing the physical components of autism. Autism, the classic picture of autism is the child who is withdrawn and doesn't maintain eye contact, doesn't like to be touched, is kind of has that checked out affect, and they don't acknowledge the many physical things that can go with that. Like, they often have gastrointestinal disturbances. I think it's something like 25% have actual conditions, the gastrointestinal conditions. That could be like irritable bowel syndrome or something lesser. Mm-hmm. And then 25% of them have seizures. So there's really a whole range. But we're increasingly seeing children who are somewhere on the continuum of what they call the autistic spectrum disorders or pervasive development disorders. And these are, there's a whole syndrome going on of children with neurological problems, and it's really epidemic at this point. The CDC, when the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they're the ones that carry statistics on the health of our country, and also they're the ones that, by the way, set the vaccination policies in this country,
mm-hmm.
Which we'll get to in a minute, but when I first started doing the research for this book, there were some places in the country where it was 1 in 150. That was the incidence for autism. Now the CDC is saying straight out that the incidence is 1 in 150, which is shocking.
Can you imagine the cost to society with that?
Excuse me?
Can you imagine the cost to society?
On so many levels.
These children are not going to be able to support themselves.
Well, that is not necessarily true. There's with natural medicine.
Untreated.
Untreated.
Untreated. It's highly unlikely that they'll be able to, you know, be productive citizens.
That's very true. And the conventional treatment approach is largely reliant on behavior modification,
which doesn't work.
It's
not a behavioral issue at its core.
Well, it may make it more manageable for the family to deal with
right.
the child, but
yeah.
it doesn't do anything to solve the child's problems.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so the incidence now is really, we can call this an epidemic. And moving on to causality, there is no, everyone would agree they don't know what causes autism, but there are suspected contributing factors, and one of them is vaccines. So this is a very controversial issue, and the controversy continues to rage and has raged for years. Most recently, and rather disappointingly, the CDC came out once again, this year, and said there is no connection between vaccines and autism, and there is no connection between vaccines and the mercury preservative that was used in vaccines and is also still used in some flu vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is this statement that they've made to me is irresponsible because they don't have proof that there is no link, and there many parents of children with autism are insistent that their child's symptoms began after getting one or another of the vaccines, getting a vaccination, and often it's the MMR vaccine that's implicated.
Right.
That's the measles, mumps, rubella.
Mm-hmm.
This is not to say that MMR by itself would cause autism, but it seems to be that autism is a genetic vulnerability. So the way I look at it in approaching the genetic factor, because that can be kind of overwhelming also to consider it as a genetic illness, because then a lot of people interpret that as, well, you can't escape it. No, that's not really true. What it means, that the idea that it's genetic, is that there's an inherited susceptibility, and all of us have an inherited susceptibility to something. So something in our body, a system in our body, is our weaker system. And so given enough environmental triggers, that could be toxic overload, that could be poor diet, it could be stress, whatever the combination of factors, our weak system, our inherited weak system, is the one that's going to break down first, most likely. So you could say about autistic children that their weak system may be their immune system and their nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And so given the onslaught of enough environmental factors, and those systems are going to break down, and then produce the symptoms of autism. And the symptoms of autism are in all areas. So it's behavioral, it's communication, it's learning disabilities, it's physical manifestations, poor digestion or allergies or many getting ill often. So there's a huge immune component. Children with autism tend to get sick a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So those are that's the whole range that can be affected by the environmental onslaught. So again, we don't need to prove causality to treat this condition. It's look at the state of each of the child's systems, immune system, nervous system, digestive system, and figure out what the imbalances are and how to address them. And by correcting those imbalances, for example, solving food allergies, the child can have improvement in symptoms in all of the areas where autism affects the child.
Now, for example, I guess first I would like to talk to you about maybe the treatment and then maybe prevention for parents who do have kids. And, you know, our environment, I think, is just because we live in a country that is so progressed in so many different levels, at the same time, you know, you take some and then you lose some at the same time. I mean, I'm originally from Iran, and in those countries, you really don't hear about autism. And I don't know if because there is no diagnosis for it, or they, you know, hide their sick babies in the background, but you don't hear it. It's it's not known.
Yeah, it's a disease of progressive countries.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Stephanie, before we answer that question, can I just interject that one of the ways I find so useful to look at an illness is to find out what the rescue, anecdotal reports are. And in autism...
What did you say? I'm sorry.
The rescue antidotal reports. In other words, the stories that the parents tell me about how they rescued their child from autism.
That's a wonderful way to put it, rescue.
And I think that that's a way to really look, like, let's look at, if we're going to study something like cancer, let's look at the spontaneous remissions, because that really gives us the best information. And then we can go back to Nari's point about why the progressive countries have this problem, whereas maybe the non-progressives don't, because I think that's the way, I mean, I'm kind of like a medical detective like you are.
Mm.
And so I have story after story of my friends and patients' friends and whatever, of a child developing a high fever shortly after a series of vaccines, often the one you mentioned, and then they rescue it with high doses of cod liver oil or other similar products that bring omega-3 fatty acids in, or a better balance of fatty acids in. And we know fatty acids are very, very important for the myelin sheath problem in the neurological system. So what other rescue things have you heard of?
Yes, I think it's you make a really good point that let's listen to the parents. Because they have so much information. I presented at a conference, the Autism One conference in Chicago one year, and I was so impressed by how incredibly educated the parents were.
Oh, they have to be.
Yeah. So they have all
kinds of information.
Because
their doctors aren't.
Yeah. So it ranges the various things that I've heard repeatedly are put the child on a gluten and casein-free diet.
That's an important one.
Yeah, that's a big one. I've also heard a lot from them about candida. So
yeah,
that would
that's still the gut too.
Yeah, that would
speak
to the
gut.
Would speak to the digestive disturbance. That there's an imbalance there, and so ways to address the candida overgrowth.
Right.
And they sometimes use conventional antifungal like nystatin,
right.
and then probiotics to rebuild the gut, but also food enzymes are really important for some children to help them break down the foods so that they're getting the nutrients from them. But before that, you have to make sure that there's a healthy gut, or all the enzymes in the world are probably not going to fix it.
And that may be still secondary, though. I'm talking about the primary illness when the child first gets ill, you see. Because, you know, when the child has all sorts of systems out of balance, you're going to have a lot of problems that are secondary. And it's important to fix the secondary problems, but I'm trying to narrow in on the culprit.
Well, I haven't actually heard from parents that are completely on top of this. That when something happens to their child, they know what it is immediately.
Okay,
so
but have you heard about the high fevers and the systemic illness right after vaccines?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And I think some people are treating that homeopathically.
Okay, good. And would that be like to get, I mean, because let's talk a little bit about how homeopathy is good for toxic-related illness.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know about this, but there's something called homeopathic nosodes. So these are not the homeopathic remedies that you buy in the health food store. They really require the supervision of a practitioner who knows what they're doing. But the nosode operates like homeopathy in that it's made from the substance that you're going after. So that's the like attracts like principle of homeopathy. So, for example, there's an MMR nosode. So this is a nosode derived from the MMR vaccine. And there is no biochemical trace of the vaccine in the nosode because homeopathy is an energy medicine. So they've done tests on homeopathic remedies, and they don't find any biochemical trace of the substance. It's the energetic imprint of the substance. But I heard from parents that getting their child cleared of the vaccines, and this is, you know, this is something that, going to prevention, that when a if you decide that your child does need the vaccine, having the child cleared with a NoSode afterward, regardless of what the reaction is, might be a good idea.
And I wanted to mention that we have a homeopath at Millennium Healthcare that does this.
Oh, God, that's so great.
Oh, yeah, she's fabulous. She's from India and just is a wealth of information on vaccination-related, you know.
So what have the parents been telling you about prevention?
Well, the big thing, if you don't mind, I'll summarize what I understand. There is a genetic-related enzyme deficiency that prevents a detoxification pathway in either a mercury-containing vaccine or something that is in that, the MMR vaccine?
It's the live vaccine that seems to be the problem.
Right. So there's something in that vaccine that's specific, maybe hasn't been identified yet, but there's something that the body isn't detoxifying. If the child has premature fontanelle closure, then the child, after the vaccine, gets high fevers, swelling of the brain, and then damage at the frontal lobes. And if you treat the child during the high fever period with massive doses of, you have to be careful about cod liver oil because it has vitamin A in it, but large doses of cod liver oil is one, several parents have said, but you could also treat specifically with brain support nutrients.
You mean like amino acids?
Well, not just amino acids, it's primarily fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it would be omega-3s or whatever is in cod liver oil, and it may be some vitamin D and vitamin A, too, because, of course, it's high in that. I'm not an expert in cod liver oil. I think maybe Dr. Ford can tell us more about cod liver oil. But that there are natural treatments that rescued these children, and even, you know, after they had actually developed the autism, because the parents take a little bit of time to do the research, obviously. And then they give them high doses, orthomolecular medicine. You're familiar with that term. We've talked about it a lot on the show.
Yeah,
psychiatric orthomolecular medicine,
yeah.
High doses of particular nutrients based on functional medicine, science. You know, we're not talking here about anything other than science. And then we rescue them. They lose their autism. Why isn't anybody studying this? It just makes me crazy.
Yes, because they could go the reverse. So why not
isn't this known by the CDC? Why aren't bulletins going out to pediatricians? The state of medicine in this country is absolutely ridiculous, especially as it's affecting our children.
Well, you know, I was very shocked recently in February. I went to hear Dr. Andrew Weil speak, and one of the questions from the audience was, what do you think about the CDC's recent statement about vaccines not causing autism? And I just want to update the audience a little bit on this, that Dr. Andrew Wakefield, a British gastroenterologist who brought out he was the first one that brought out scientific information about the link between MMR and perhaps the possible link between MMR and autism, he is continues to be raked over the coals. There's another attack on him this year. He's really, they've tried to destroy him.
Yeah, God forbid that you go up against these multinational corporations.
Yeah, and I just want to say that readers don't necessarily believe that Andrew Wakefield's original study was flawed, because there's many, many reasons why people want to say it's flawed. So I would really encourage the listeners to investigate this for themselves. I was very disappointed because Dr. Andrew Weil, in response to this question, said, no, there is no link between vaccines and autism. And I think that's an irresponsible statement. I very much respect Dr. Andrew Weil. He's brought natural medicine to the public forum.
Perhaps he hasn't read the scientific studies I've read, because there's an awful lot of evidence.
I thought it was a very irresponsible statement.
It is, because the studies exist.
Yeah, just simply because let's talk to the parents. There are so many parents saying that there's child symptoms started after the vaccine.
Within 24 hours, right after the vaccine.
We
have to start becoming a lot smarter than we are.
Yeah.
We have to quit trusting an authority that is more concerned with profit than it is with public health. period.
Yes, Dr. Bernard Rimland, the late, great Dr. Bernard Rimland, who was the founder of the Autism Research Institute in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
he said having the CDC investigate the safety of vaccines is like having the fox guard the chicken house.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we can say on this show for people listening is, investigate any vaccine that comes in a form, especially vaccines that are treating life-threatening conditions, for your children and for yourself. Try to get thimerosal-free vaccines. They exist.
Well, I just pulled off the CDC website, their
uh-huh.
immunization schedule,
uh-huh.
And they had information surrounding this, and one of the things they said is that as of 2001,
mm-hmm.
There are no more vaccines being made with mercury in it except for some flu vaccines.
But the flu vaccine, you can get thimerosal-free. I mean, people need to know that
yes,
if you
yes.
go to Walmart or if you go to your local, you know, whatever, CVS or something, get a flu shot, you don't know, unless you ask, if it's thimerosal-free.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to know what you're putting in your body. I'm allergic to thimerosal. I found that out putting contact lens solution in my eye, right? I took vaccines. I got incredibly ill, okay? I got whatever that genetic thing is. You know, thank God I didn't get autism.
Yeah, really.
Maybe I did.
Probably the reason why I didn't is because...
I was actually supposed to be a lot smarter than I am.
And just for your listeners, the thimerosal is the mercury-containing preservative that
right.
they used to use in vaccines. And I think we also have to say, we have to thank the parents of children with autism for getting thimerosal out of vaccines because
right, right.
The CDC was refusing to acknowledge that link. But yet, because of the outcry from parents, they
right.
pulled the thimerosal out of vaccines.
And it's well known in the allergy world that thimerosal is very, very much causes reactions in a lot of people. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, like tape reactions.
Well,
people have adhesive allergies. You know, it's not a rare thing to have a thimerosal allergy.
Yeah. And it just continues to amaze me. I shouldn't be amazed by it anymore, but I still am, that where is the common sense in all of this? Because
there is no common sense.
Mercury is not allowed to be put into the landfill.
I know.
Why is it allowed in our children or in our mouths in dentistry?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's
crazy.
Like silicone. Silicone is a toxic substance not allowed to cross state lines, yet, and you can't inject it in the human body, yet the FDA approved it to go back into women in envelopes that are going to leak usually within 10 to 20 years and spread throughout the body. There's no way they can prevent it, but that's okay because you know what? There are multinational companies making money off of it. That is the key. You know, people just have to wake up and realize that the world is not like their parents taught them. The world is very different than what their parents taught them. And common sense is not the standard. The standard is how much money can we make, and we don't give a crap who we hurt.
And I want to thank you once again for your work in that area with silicone implants. It's helped so many women. I'm really appreciative of you doing that. I wanted to say the schedule that I pulled off the CDC website this morning was I wanted to see how many vaccines they recommend now, and it is up to for a child
mm-hmm.
by the time they are 6 years old. If you follow this schedule, you will have had 28 different vaccines. These are repetitions of some of them, but
mm-hmm.
28 different shots, or you might have had a combination shot, but 28 plus the yearly flu, which they recommend, which may or may not contain mercury, and if you add in certain high-risk groups, if you're in those groups, then you will have had 32 plus the flu.
Because I know by the time they are 2 to 4 months old, you are supposed to give them 5 or 6 vaccinations at one time.
And again, we come back to common sense here because how can a baby's developing immune and nervous system
right.
handle this toxic onslaught?
Well, they don't, obviously. 1 in 150.
Well,
Nari, can you comment a little bit about what a prudent parent would do in terms of limiting vaccines, and also when should vaccines start, in your opinion, because you have a small baby?
Oh, you're talking to me.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Nori has
well,
a small baby. Yeah, I mean, she's right in the middle of making these decisions.
Well, to be honest with you, I have not vaccinated my little kid yet, baby.
Yay.
She's 6.5 months, and we go to a traditional... She has two pediatricians. And she have a traditional pediatrician and sort of an alternative integrated pediatrician. She gets... Well, she hasn't been vaccinated traditional vaccines, but she gets homeopathic vaccines.
Mm-hmm. See, that's a choice.
Yes. That's the choice that we made, well, I made, and I am getting a lot of flack from everybody. Everybody.
What did they say?
Yeah, well, from friends, from families, from everybody, and which I understand. Sometimes I doubt myself, too, because I was, I studied traditional medicine. You know, I remember when I was doing peds, and I still do peds, but when, in the beginning, when I finished residency, if a parent didn't want to vaccinate them, it was just, I would look at them as though you really are not a very good parent, and why is not your baby in a foster care?
That's why I wanted her to say something, because I think it's great. A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Yes. So, and then when I started...
I'm getting some really loud feedback here. Oh, there we go.
Is that better?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. And then when I started learning more about alternative and integrated medicine, the more I learned about it, I mean, because I was working with these different physicians, that they had all these autistic kids, and mom and parents come and will say, as soon as we get the vaccination, the baby got this, the baby got that, and in medicine, in medical school and in residency, you don't hear things like that. They poo-poo them because you really don't see all these devastated parents who come after this vaccination, and they're just devastated because their child was okay before, and all of a sudden they're just not acting right.
See, that's the smoking gun, okay?
Yeah.
As like with breast implants. You know, somebody has a car wreck, their breast implant shatters into a million pieces, and then a week later, they're really, really sick. You know, they got chemical toxicity from the breast implant, you know, releasing all those chemicals into the system. Basically, though, we can divide vaccines into two kinds, those for life-threatening diseases and those for not life-threatening diseases. I mean, tetanus. I mean, when the kid starts walking around and is able to step on a rusty nail, I think everybody would agree that a tetanus vaccine might be a good thing, you know,
exactly.
as a surgeon, you know.
Or hepatitis B.
Yeah, you know, the things that are life-threatening.
Yes.
But Anari made a good point. You don't give them at, like, 6 weeks. You know, you wait until their immune systems are a little bit more developed.
I think it would be good at this point to talk about some other safety precautions regarding vaccines, because, as you say, Anari, many parents are getting a lot of pressure, and also... The schools make them think that they have to do this.
Right, they do.
There are exemptions. You can claim religious reasons. You can claim philosophical reasons in some states, not all. But in terms of the safety, you know, I understand what you're saying about feeling like perhaps you were a bad mother because you didn't do this, and there's so much pressure about that. So some of the safety things are, it's very, very simple in that if you want to vaccinate, don't give them all at once.
Exactly. That's a very good point.
Yeah, one or 2 months apart. You know, 2 months is better if you're going to do it. And then the hepatitis B vaccine at birth is, to me, completely crazy.
Isn't it?
It is. This is a universal mandate, hepatitis B at birth for all children. They're not going to be exposed. Most children are not going to be exposed to the sources of Hep B until they're much, much older, some into their teens.
Right.
The only children who are at risk at that point are the children of infected mothers.
Right.
So all you have to do is give the mother a test to determine, is she infected? And then, you know, her baby, that might be a consideration. There are other ways to handle it. But what about all those other babies? They don't need it.
And also, when you give vaccines, say you want to give some vaccines because of high risk, that's fine. There are detoxification methods to get these chemicals out of the children that are safe.
And then another thing that I thought you mentioned, that when the fontanelle and the sutures, they close up very fast. And the craniosacral works really well with those patients. Mm. And I think it would be a good idea for parents to find somebody who does craniosacral work on their kids as a preventive treatment, not necessarily when they actually get it, but as a preventive treatment.
There's another good preventive measure related to that. The cranial osteopath that I cover in my book says that the autism, we could stop the autism epidemic tomorrow if we changed the birth practices and or had a baby receive cranial osteopathic adjustment right after birth if the birth was difficult. So that means he's talking about the use of epidural and Pitocin that speeds up the birth and interferes with the natural opening and closing of the head and the pelvic channel, the head of the baby and the mother's pelvic channel as the baby goes through, is creating these locked skulls, which he looked at a series of x-rays of children in his practice, and he could, x-rays of the head, and he could pick out the autistic children.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, based on the malformation and the certain kind of malformation of the skull.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's fascinating.
And also, I think that there's a test for the lack of this particular enzyme that is involved in detoxification.
Oh,
if I remember, we discussed this on our last time we discussed this book.
And metallocyanine, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, if they just do the test on the child and find the child is deficient in the enzyme, then don't vaccinate them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not so hard. I believe that I heard somewhere the cost of the test is about $100.
And then the child could be started on the combination of nutrients that can deal with that deficiency.
Yeah, and homeopathic vaccinations, which are a viable alternative.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the good news is there are options.
Yeah, there are, but we need to educate everybody. That's why we need books like yours.
Yeah, and work like you two are doing. Yeah. So what else do you hear from parents?
Well, I think you cover everything in your book that they talk about. Detoxification procedures are very important, craniosacral procedures. NATE is extremely important, and we do have a practitioner that does NATE, does a great job, studied with the person who developed NATE, the allergy elimination technique. But remember, NATE deals with allergic that aren't really sometimes true allergies, but just bad reactions to things.
Just sensitivities.
So therefore, NATE would be like a cornerstone in the treatment once you've gotten a vaccine or whatever other agent is you know, because it's not just vaccines. There is mercury and other things, and we don't know if there's another smoking gun somewhere that we're not aware of.
I think it's interesting, the smoke issue, because one of the things I was thinking about when I think about the CDC and the vaccine mercury mm-hmm. controversy is where there's smoke, there's fire. So,
right.
You know, too many parents are saying something about this that...
Well, we have to be careful, though. You know, we don't know what else is in these vaccines. One of the things, when I started reading about vaccines, I was going, oh, my God, now they're saying that in that polio vaccine that we all took, you know, when we were in grade school, that there's a virus that can cause lymphoma that is a live virus that was actually in that stuff, you know.
Well,
And we all took it, you know. Whoops. Okay, so the whoops factor to me is, gee, we don't understand science enough. The people making the vaccines don't understand enough about the long-term effects of these viruses, some of which are slow viruses. I mean, Nari's probably heard that term. You know, what's a slow virus? A slow virus is whatever agent is taking 20 years to manifest, and so it completely outwits our science. You know, anything that takes 20 years to manifest is just going to get by. It just will, because nobody's looking 20 years in the future.
Well, even on short-term effects, to me, the burden of proof should lie with them. That they need to prove that it's safe before they use it.
Our system isn't set up that way.
Yeah, I know.
At all. Well, also for the vaccinations, I know I'm just harping on vaccinations, and I do believe, you know, if you do need it, you do need it. These are life-saving vaccine, the polio, like what you were talking about, it saved so many lives. But at the same time, if you live in India or countries that they do have polio or hepatitis B is rampant, go ahead and do it. But at the same time, I really don't think it's just aluminum or formaldehyde or just mercury. I just think there are other stuff, a lot of material in the, as what you were saying, in the vaccinations that we have no idea how it affects us. And that's the main thing. It's just not the mercury. Maybe that's why they are just harping on mercury, that there is a direct effect with mercury and autism. And you know what? It might just not be mercury. It might just be mercury added with other stuff that is causing
that's the vaccination. That's very true.
It's very true. And, you know, one of the other ingredients that's in some vaccines is aluminum. And they've clearly made a link between aluminum and Alzheimer's. So we're starting our kids off early.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get back to what you were saying about Iran, because that's very interesting to me. And I think, I don't know if in cities in Iran where they might have access to some of the many household chemicals that American households are so filled with, but I think that's another good point for parents is look at all the products you have in your home.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to reduce your child's toxic exposure as much as you can, because there's nothing we can do immediately for the child about the broader environment, you know, because we live in a toxic world, but you certainly can detoxify your house.
Exactly.
So that means using no cleaning products that have all those commercial chemicals in them. And there's a big deal with artificial scents, perfumes that are in laundry detergents, in household cleansers, and they are not required to list the ingredients of those perfumes. So that there's all kinds of nasty chemicals that go into making those smells. So I think anybody who has an autistic child would do well to do a review of what they have in their house. And this is bathroom cleaners, this is laundry items, and certainly no children with autism should be wearing clothes that have had Bounce used on them, or any of the fabric softeners.
Yeah, you can buy those balls now.
Excuse me?
I don't use Bounce anymore. You buy those balls for like $5 for two of them. Put them in your dryer. They last forever. I mean, eventually they'll break down. But
what's in those?
I don't know. But the,
I think it's a hard plastic ball.
It's a hard plastic that does it not. It does it mechanically, not chemically.
Huh. I would be. I'd be wondering about the issue of heat and plastic.
Well, that brings up another thing. I was just reading this morning all of the stuff that's coming through on my internet on the dangers of, what is it, BPA?
Is that the preservative?
No, that's the plastic that is now linked with breast cancer, testicular cancer, and, you know, all these other epidemic cancers we have. Is the exposure, especially in baby products, the baby bottles.
Oh, yes, the baby bottle controversy.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's the particular kind of plastic that they're now removing. Thank goodness they are, but they're going to remove it from, because I guess they have alternatives in industry.
Well, then you wonder about the other plastics. When are they going to find out about those, you know?
Well, that's true, but I think the problem that people have to understand is that whenever a plastic is either heated or frozen, it can break down. Probably if you use it at room temperature, it's less likely to break down. These are just common sense things.
Right, but people put those plastic bottles in a pan of water to heat them up.
Or the microwave.
Yeah, or the microwave, yeah.
Yeah, but and they freeze them, too.
Yeah.
So, or they leave them in the car when it's, you know, 100 and something degrees outside. But, you know, let's go back a little bit to intuition. I knew back well before the scientific studies were done that to put plastic in the microwave would cause cancer. I knew that, not because I'd read any studies because they didn't exist, because I just knew it, okay? And I would go around telling people, don't do that. Put that in a Corningware thing, not in a plastic thing to heat it up, you know, those pre-frozen dinners, because that's going to cause cancer. And then sure enough, the studies came out, and then the Johns Hopkins Bulletin came out like a couple of months ago saying, don't do this because it causes cancer. But what about our own God-given gift of intuition?
Mm.
That is what we need to teach people to use, because guess what? You're not going to be able to count on the scientific universities. They're often in the pocket of the multinational companies I talked about earlier. You're not going to be able to count on the government. They're also in the pocket of the multinational corporations I talked about earlier. Given that the world is inherently a kind of upside-down, backwards, screwed-up place, what are you left with? One thing, your gut feeling.
And what does your gut feeling tell you about what microwaving does to food?
Well, it's not good, but then if you bless it, you can completely reverse it. See, I'm a technocrat. I love technology, okay? So I just have to find ways around the damage done to things.
I love that creative way around it, yeah. But the other thing I wanted to say, though, is that as part of the review of the household toxins, I think parents, it would behoove them to also consider electronics regarding their child.
Absolutely.
So to have a child with autism talking on a cell phone seems to me a very bad idea.
No kidding. That's a very good point. We definitely have electromagnetic, waste and dangerous things. Especially when your cell phone gets hot, that's when it's putting off the most radiation because it doesn't have as good reception. So, you know, there are chips you can put on the cell phone to help disperse that radiation. You can use a cord. And children should not be using cell phones except in emergencies. Even teenagers.
At what age do you think they can start using cell phones?
Well, I guess the common sense thing that's coming out of the alternative health industry right now is just when they have a need to, you know, when the benefit outweighs the risk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you don't know where your kid is and the kid has a cell phone on him and you call him to find out where they are and you don't talk too long, that's probably okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you can put the chip on the cell phone, you can buy a cell phone that can be put elsewhere rather than just up against the head. And we interviewed Dr. Carlo on this radio show. Dr. Carlo did $20 million worth of research for the cell phone industry and found that it really does cause acoustic neuromas and malignant brain tumors.
Mm.
And when he wouldn't just flip when they asked him to, some really bad things happened to him. And he then ended up putting I won't go into the details, but I do know the details. And he ended up writing a book. And people, if they look on the Internet, they can find a book by Dr. Carlo about what he really found. And, you know, again, people need to educate themselves. They need to quit trusting what they see on TV, what they read in the newspaper. The media is not controlled by the people that have your health at as their interest. And basically understand what the world is. I mean, it's a wake-up call, but it's true. And it's true in every aspect.
Could I give Dr. Andrew Wakefield is working now?
Sure.
His website address is thoughtfulhouse.org, and that's in Texas. He
mm-hmm.
left England, it's a center for the treatment of autism. So if people want to look up information about the whole controversy and about what his stand is, thoughtfulhouse.org is the place for...
And Nari, if you're interested, just ask our folks to set him up for an interview. See, we can talk to any of these people who are giving interviews.
Yeah.
That would be really
and
wonderful.
And we have not talked to the scientists about this. You know, I don't think we've done that, because last time we talked about this, Stephanie, he was probably still over in England, wasn't he?
It was a Sunday Times in mm-hmm. London. A reporter went after him, and
right.
The result of all of that was that he had to resign from his position.
Well, that's like standard. That is absolutely standard. Anybody that tries to tell the truth is professionally, they go after him professionally. There was a toxicologist who told me himself that they tried to take his medical license away because he published in the Israeli Journal of Occupational Health and Medicine a study of 8 or 9 patients with platinum toxicity from silicone gel implants. This wasn't even a U.S. journal.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so if you don't think that, especially publishing, because let me tell you why. People don't understand the system. I understand the system because I'm smack dab in the middle of it. You don't become dangerous to these people until you qualify as a Daubert witness. You understand, Daubert was a Supreme Court decision that said these are the criteria for someone to be an expert witness. And one of the big ones is that you've published in the peer-reviewed literature on the subject. So now you know why I haven't published in the peer-reviewed literature. You got to know the system, which means you have to know law, government, you have to know business, you have to know medicine, and you have to know so much to navigate through this.
And also, the follow the money still holds.
Oh, it does.
Because one of the things that that came out in this whole controversy is, you know, there's all these charges that he falsified his, that Dr. Wakefield falsified his data.
But then
if you investigate, you find out that this journalist, the Sunday Times, his boss, has some connection to MMR manufacturers.
Right.
This is the rumor. So, you know, what's true? It's really hard to figure it out.
Well, it's really not hard if you look at each case and then put them all together because there's patterns. Are you familiar with Jeffrey Smith, who went up against Monsanto and Bayer with genetically modified foods?
Yes.
I interviewed him a couple of times. I said, Jeffrey, how did you end up not getting knocked off by these companies? And he says, well, let me tell you. And then he proceeds to give me about 8 things that he did.
is that like a bulletproof vest? Or?
Well, also bulletproofing yourself, you know, professionally and protecting your, I won't go into the details of
right.
it, but basically there are things you can do to assure that you won't be a victim. Because if you study each, what happened to Dr. Carla, you studied what happens to the other scientist, Dr. Wakefield, there are patterns. I wanted to tell a short story. I don't know how much time we have left, but I don't know if you know that Ralph Nader, when he was early in his career, before he was just going up against GM to try to get them to put seatbelts in cars, they sent a prostitute out to kind of tempt him, and of course it didn't work. He sued GM and won $400,000, and with that money he started Nader's Raiders. And back in the 70s, $400,000 was worth a couple of million. So the point is, the tactics haven't changed. Understand that. The tactics are still the same. You have to look at the tactics. If you're in this arena, you look at the tactics, especially if you're in science, you look at the tactics, and then you can decide, you know, how you get around them.
Right, and the new way of killing the messenger is to discredit the messenger.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, anyway, I think we're near the end of our hour, so can we get contact information from you, Stephanie?
Thank you, yes. My website is www.stephaniemarone.com, and it's STEPHANIEMAROHN, and I have my books on there. And then also I just wanted to announce that I have a book coming out this week. It's an anthology that I've authored called Audacious Aging,
which we need to have you on the show to talk about.
I would love to do that. And the website for that is www.audaciousaging.com. And it will be in bookstores soon, and it's already on Amazon. They don't have copies to send you today, but they'll have it early this week.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get you back on. I'm glad you got the book out. We've been talking about it for a little while.
Yes, we have. And I'm thrilled to be back on the show with you. It's wonderful.
Great.
Both of you.
Same here.
Yeah.
Well, next week we are talking with Dr. Christine DeQuincy, who is the author of the book Consciousness from Zombies to Angels. And then the next week, Spiritual Initiation and the Breakthrough of Consciousness by Joseph Chilton Pierce. Nara, you have anything, other announcements?
No, I just wanted to also let everybody know about our Millennium Health and Plastico, which we have two plastic surgeons, Susan Kolb and Asif Yalif, and we have Dr. Clofine, which is a great gynecologist and holistic medicine, and then me, which I do family, I'm a family physician, and I do peds and babies and anti-aging, and we have a chiropractor who does NATE, which is takes care of allergies, and he's great. We have a homeopath. We have a Chinese acupuncturist who's really good. And, of course, we have they are licensed medical medical spa, which they are wonderful. So, and we have so many other facilities and providers in the clinic, which are really good. The clinic is actually a very good holistic way of approaching different ailments. And as what Stephanie was saying, because it's a holistic and integrated medicine, we try to find the underlying, not necessarily the cause and effect or a genetic maybe, but just to see what are the causes that, just for example, hypertension, not necessarily a diagnosis, but a symptom of so many different things. So we try to take care of that in the underlying causes. So check us out, and I think you will really enjoy spending time with our providers. And thank you so much, Stephanie, for the talk. It has been a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I really recommend our listeners to at least check out your book. Your book is really easy to read. As I said, when I looked at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so thick and it's going to be so overwhelming, but it really isn't. It's very easy to sort of read through different chapters.
Thank you again for those kind words.
Oh, you're most welcome. My pleasure.
Well, I guess we will be back next week with Temple of Health Radio Show. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plastico's do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plastico's to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastico's made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastico's surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastico's?
Plastico's is in Dunwoody. Plastico's is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastico's number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.